Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 4, text 30. Tatapi bata me daya hi atma cha eva atmana vibhu asampana eva abati brahma varchasa satama. Tatapi batame dayo. Tatapi batame dayo. Yatma chai vatmana vibhu. Yatma chai vatmana vibhu. Asampana ivabati. Asampana ivabati. Brahma varchasya sattama. Brahma varchasya sattama. Tatapi batame dayo. Yatma chai vatmana vibhu. Asampana ivabhati. Brahma varchasya sattama. Others? Okay. Tatapi, although, bata, defect, me, mine, daya, situated in the body, he, certainly, atma, living being, cha, and, eva, even, atmana, myself, vibhu, sufficient, asampana, wanting in, eva abhati, it appears to be, brahma varchasya, of the Vedantis, satama, the supreme. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I am feeling, this is Srila Vyasadeva speaking. Actually, he's not speaking. He's thinking. It mentions in the previous couple of verses previous to that. It says here, thus the sage, being satisfied at heart, at once began to reflect because he knew the essence of religion, and he said within himself, so this is Vyasadeva, we're hearing his thoughts. It's actually Sutta Goswami, I guess, who's speaking. So anyway, it says, I am feeling incomplete, though I myself am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. Purport. Undoubtedly, Srila Vyasadeva was complete in all the details of Vedic achievements. Purification of the living being submerged in matter is made possible by the prescribed activities in the Vedas. But the ultimate achievement is different. Unless it is attained, the living being, even though fully equipped, cannot be situated in the transcendentally normal stage. Srila Vyasadeva appeared to have lost the clue and therefore felt dissatisfaction. Om Aginata Mananda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Didapti Swapadanti Kam. So, before I actually start talking about the verse and purport, I want to just present some background information that hopefully will inspire us to pay even closer attention to this part of the Bhagavatam that we're studying. So the title of this chapter is called The Appearance of Sri Narada. And we're close to the end of the chapter, and he hasn't appeared yet. Okay? We're on verse 30. He appears, there's 33 verses in this chapter, and he appears verse 32. So, the second to last verse of the chapter is where he appears. But I take that to mean that he's so important, Narada Muni is so important, that even though he's appearing in the second to last verse of the chapter, still the chapter gets named after him, the appearance of Narada. He's that important. So this is like in a really amazing part of the Bhagavatam. I mean, the whole Bhagavatam is amazing, but this is a really amazing part of the Bhagavatam. I mean, this is like where the Bhagavatam kind of blasts off into space, pardon the expression. I mean, you got to stop and think about who we're just about to hear from. This is a conversation between Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva, okay? Srila Vyasadeva is minimally an empowered jiva. It's described in the Vishnu Purana, and also it's corroborated in the Vayu Purana, that there's a Vyasadeva in every cycle of millennium. At the beginning of every Kali Yuga, there's a Vyasadeva, okay? Generally, it's an empowered jiva, okay? In the 28th round of millennium, 28th round of the millenniums, okay, the Vyasadeva is an expansion of Vishnu himself. That's in the Vayu Purana. Okay, so that's the round of millenniums that we're in. Of course, even an empowered jiva is pretty good, but the Vyasadeva who just appeared, or still really, I think Vyasadeva is one of the personalities that's still alive someplace today, he's an expansion of Vishnu, direct expansion of Vishnu. He's not just an empowered jiva. So, very super elevated personality. In two texts from now, in text 32 in the purport, Prabhupada says, Vyasadeva, he refers to him as an empowered divinity. So, it's pretty exalted. Okay, so that's Vyasadeva. And there's so many other, if you look in the back in the index and you look up Vyasadeva, you'll find, so many other references where, Prabhupada, there's one where he says Vyasadeva and Krishna are on the same level. Basically, he's right up there with Krishna. It doesn't get any higher. And as far as Narada Muni goes, Narada Muni is also a very special personality. He's the son of Lord Brahma, and he's been doing his service for a real long time. Let's see, find what I'm looking for here. Sometimes we hear about, say somebody asks, Prabhu, how long are you doing book distribution? And the devotee says, I've been doing it for 10 years. Oh, really? 10 years? Wow. Or if somebody says 20 years, you go, whoa, 20 years? Or even, 30? Wow. Narada Muni's been doing this service if you take it at face, you know, it's in a superficial way, if you take it in a superficial way, Narada Muni's been doing this service of being a spiritual master and distributing, not books, but Krishna consciousness for 4,300,000,000 years. Yeah. Here's a statement that kind of supports that. He says, this is Narada Muni speaking, because, you know, we're coming into the part of the Bhagavatam here where Vyasadeva at some point, well, short, what happens is this. Vyasadeva is mentioned here as, you know, he's feeling, he says, a little incomplete. And he actually knows the problem himself, because in the very next verse, in the very next text, he's still thinking, and he goes, this may be, you know, he knows why he's feeling dissatisfied and not, as he says, in his own words, feeling incomplete. Because he says, because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear both to the perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. So he already knows. You know, Vyasadeva already knows why he's not feeling completely satisfied or why he's feeling incomplete. And anyway, so Narada Muni, but he asks, but then Narada Muni appears on the scene and he asks him, what's the root cause? Oh, I know. First, actually, something interesting happens before that. So Narada Muni appears on the scene. Vyasadeva is very pleased to see him. He greets him properly, you know, offers him a seat and or shows him respect and everything. And he kind of reveals his mind a little bit. And actually, I don't even think he reveals his mind a little bit. Narada Muni starts off. He says, oh, so are you satisfied identifying the mind and the body as objects of self-realization? You know, almost to kind of like, and you know, he get, and Vyasadeva realized that, well, he can't hide anything from Narada Muni, so, but then he goes on to ask him, he says, well, what's the root cause of my dissatisfaction? And basically Narada Muni just, he tells Vyasadeva exactly what Vyasadeva, you know, was thinking, that, yeah, you've neglected to glorify, you've neglected to emphasize the importance of devotional service, you've neglected to glorify Krishna, you've emphasized Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, you know, in the Mahabharata, and you've explained all about the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth, Brahman realization, the Vedanta Sutra, and you did a lot of, you know, good stuff like that, but you didn't kind of like take it to the conclusion. You didn't really directly glorify and encourage people in, you know, in glorifying Krishna and engaging in devotional service. And that's why you're feeling like that. And there's a verse earlier on in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam where Suta Goswami is addressing the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shonaka Rishi or Shonaka Muni. And he confirms that same understanding. He says, Dharma svanusti tat pumsam vikshvakshenu gatasuyat nodpadayad yathi ratem shrama avihi kevalam, that occupational duties performed by men. Now don't forget, this, he's saying that 5,000 years ago. So, you know, when he's talking about occupational duties 5,000 years ago, Suta Goswami, he's not talking about whether you're a, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, a longshoreman, an electrician or software engineer. He's talking about occupational duties back then meant whether you're a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, a Sudra. He's talking about, you know, the Vanashram, the occupational duties of the Vanashram system, which are meant here, which are described someplace here. They're meant for, I think it even says it in this, yeah. They're meant for purifying. See, purification of living beings submerged in matter is made possible by prescribed activities in the Vedas. So it's referring to the, you know, the Vanashram there. Okay, so Suta Goswami is making the point that even if you are engaged in the occupational duties prescribed in the Vedas, you know, for which are meant for purification, it's acknowledged here, purification of living beings submerged in matter is made possible by those prescribed activities in the Vedas, right? But how's it going? Shrama, if they don't provoke an attraction for hearing the messages of Vasudeva, knows, even if you engage in your occupational duty as a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, Sudra, but you don't do it in such a way, some sit here at Haritoshanam, that, you know, Krishna is pleased, the Supreme Lord is pleased, and you don't, if you don't awaken an attraction for hearing the messages of Vasudeva, then it's Shrama Avi Kevalam, you see? So that's the point that's being made here. You know, that's the point Narada Muni makes to Vyasadeva. So he tells him that. You know, he tells him that in some fabulous verses describing that. And then he goes on to, he elaborates upon that. And basically, Vyasadeva is just blown away. Pardon the expression. He is so impressed. Narada Muni just kind of like, really, like, just lays it out so beautifully. Describes, you know, the whole devotional service and the how to engage in devotional. He just explains everything so nicely that by the time he's finished, Vyasadeva is just like, holy smoke, man! Wow, that was awesome. I mean, you know, to put it in a modern day vernacular, he was so impressed that he just couldn't help. It like was like, you know, like when you hear somebody give an amazing class or something like that, you just kind of like, you don't even know what to say. It was like that. So much so that he really didn't have a question for him. He just, how'd you become so advanced? He basically asked him, please tell me about your life. Tell me how did you get to where you are now? You know, he wants to know everything he could possibly know about Narada Muni. So Narada Muni does that. He obliges. And he talks to Vyasadeva. He describes his whole life to Vyasadeva, you know. And which I've, in previous classes, I've kind of mentioned. So I'm not going to say, you know, touch upon anything I said previously in any previous class now. But I'll, some additional information, where I left off in a previous class is that, it gets to the point where, you know, Narada Muni, He tells him about in his past lives the son of a maidservant and how his mother got bit by a snake and he took it as a benediction of the Lord and he went off and then he was meditating in a lonely place and he actually, Krishna revealed himself. He saw Krishna in his meditation. I hope this lady here is seeing Krishna in a meditation. But then all of a sudden he didn't see Krishna anymore. And he became, what happened, you know? And then he tried again and again and again and couldn't, you know, get that same vision of Krishna again. And then he heard a voice and Krishna told him, you know, I'm sorry, but you're not complete in devotional service. I did this because I wanted to encourage you, but you're not complete in devotional service. And because you're not really complete in devotional service, you know, you're not going to see me again in this lifetime, but, you know, you're going to, don't worry, that whatever, you know, you're going to, next lifetime, you're going to be liberated like that. So anyway, so at that point, that after that, what happens after that, Narada Muni describes himself. You know, he says, then that supreme authority personified by sound and unseen by eyes, but most wonderful, stopped speaking. He gave him a few instructions and then he stopped speaking. Feeling a sense of gratitude, I offer my obeisances unto him, bowing my head. Thus I began chanting the holy name and fame of the Lord. By repeated recitation, ignoring all the formalities of the material world. Such chanting and remembering of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are benedictory. So doing, I traveled all over the earth, fully satisfied, humble, and unenvious. And so, O Brahman Vyasadeva, in due course of time, I, who was fully absorbed in thinking of Krishna, and who therefore had no attachments, being completely freed from all material taints, met with death, as lightning and illumination occur simultaneously. And then he goes on to explain, having been awarded a transcendental body befitting an associate of the personality of Godhead, I quit the body made of five elements, and thus all acquired fruit of results of work, karma, stop. And Prabhupada says, in the first line of the Purport, Prabhupada says, informed by the personality of Godhead that he would be awarded a transcendental body befitting the Lord's association, Narada got his spiritual body as soon as he quit his material body. See, so... Anyway, that's just, you know, a little background information on Narada Muni. Now, I started off by saying that Narada Muni, you've been doing his service for a long time, since the beginning of this day of Lord Brahma. Because he goes on to say, I think he mentions that. He says, after 4,300,000,000 solar years, when Brahma awoke to create again by the will of the Lord, all the rishis like Marichi, Angira, Atri, and so on were created from the transcendental body of the Lord. And I also appeared along with them. You see? So he appeared along with Lord Brahma. So he's there right at the beginning of the day of Lord Brahma. And we're about 2 million... Actually, maybe that's... So Lord Brahma, the night of Lord Brahma is that length. I made a mistake in my mathematics here. Brahma's full day is 8,600,000,000 years long. So his night is 4.3 billion and his day is 4.3 million. So after 4.3 billion years, which represents Lord Brahma's night, Lord Brahma awoke and the sages, including Narada Muni, appeared with him. So how far are we into this day of Lord Brahma? About halfway? About halfway, isn't it? 28. No, we're in the 28th out of 71. So let's say we're about one-third into, a little more than one-third into this day of Lord Brahma. So what's one-third of 4.3? About 2 billion. Let's say 2 billion, whatever it is. Anyway, so he's been doing this, but that's superficial. That's, you know, it's a superficial understanding. Because actually, we get information from a purport in this section where Prabhupada says, here it is. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, the birth and activities of the Lord are all transcendental. Okay. Therefore, according to authorized opinion, the birth of Narada as the son of Brahma is also a transcendental pastime. His appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. So in other words, he is a Nityasiddha. He's an eternally liberated associate of Krishna. That's the real proper, the most philosophically proper way to understand Narada Muni. Not to think of him as somebody who was once the son of a maidservant and he, you know, got lucky and he served heard from the Bhaktivedantas and got to taste the remnants of the food. That all happened. But even beyond that, it's a pastime. Because beyond that, he is a Nityasiddha. He's an eternally liberated associate. He's somebody who's descended from the spiritual world on a mission. And as mentioned here, his appearance and disappearance are practically on the same level as that of the Lord. It's a pastime. And that's his level. So, getting back to the original point I was making, that in this section of the Bhagavatam, we're hearing from, these are like the two top most all-star, on the all-star team Hall of Famers. You know, you're hearing from Srila Vyasadeva, who is in this particular round of millenniums is none other than an expansion of Lord Vishnu. You're hearing from Narada Muni, who is a Nityasiddha associate of Lord Krishna. He figures in, he's in all the important pastimes. You know, when you read through the Vedic literatures, he's all throughout the 10th canto, he's in that book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. You know, so this you know, as devotees, we should get real excited. It's like, you know, it's like this is an opportunity to hear like a conversation. Imagine if you had an opportunity to hear a conversation between Srila Prabhupada and his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta. You know, they were talking and you got the chance to go into the room and you'd be like, oh man, let me in on that room. Let me in on that conversation. Right? That's what's going on here. This is a really, important thing. And basically, it's a pastime. You know, Narada Muni doesn't, Vyasadeva, he already knows, as I kind of mentioned, he already kind of figured out why he wasn't satisfied. And you know, so he doesn't really need to be instructed by Narada Muni. And Narada Muni doesn't really need to instruct him. But it's a pastime. And what is this? What's the purpose of this pastime? First of all, what is a pastime? I looked it up in the dictionary. A pastime is something that a person doesn't have to do. You know, it's not like it's his job or his work or anything like that. It's something that he does for enjoyment, like a pastime. Somebody's pastime might be playing golf. Somebody else's pastime might be collecting stamps. Somebody else's pastime might be listening to classical music, just to give you an example. Those are pastimes, you know, and the list goes on and on and on and on. Okay, so what is the pastime? What is Krishna's favorite pastime? What does Krishna do for fun? And what does Krishna, do for a pastime? Well, now this is not something that's directly stated, but this is my understanding. Krishna's favorite, one of Krishna's favorite pastimes is trying to deliver the fallen conditioned souls. That's what Krishna does for fun. Krishna enjoys being kinder and more merciful than he even has to be, and you know, extending himself even beyond what he's already done to try to deliver the fallen, engage people who have strayed away from his devotional service back in his devotional service again. That's the pastime. That's the pastime here. That's what's actually going on here. That's the purpose. That's the underlying purpose between this conversation between Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva. It's part of, you know, a pastime of Krishna to try to engage fallen conditioned souls back in Krishna consciousness again. And the text 8 of chapter 5, the next chapter, there's one sentence here, I just stumbled upon it this morning. Prabhupada says, the Lord has expanded himself as living beings in order to accept loving service from them. And this alone can satisfy both the Lord and the living beings. So, you know, that's the like the underpinning of all these activities, that Krishna, he expands as the living beings. You know, Krishna's expanded himself. We're Vibhinamsa expansions of Krishna. Krishna's expanded as the living entities. Why? In order to accept loving service from them. He wants this that relationship. He wants that, you know, loving service relationship. So when some of his spiritual offspring make the mistake of trying to be happy in some other way, Krishna is unhappy about that. And he tries to correct them. He tries to rectify that. That's his pastime. He doesn't have to. You know, he doesn't have to do it. It's not like it's his job or anything like that. He's obliged to. No. You know, he's already done his job by just expanding, giving us that opportunity in the first place. And then we mess up. But Krishna's just, okay, let me just be even more merciful than I was in the first place by expanding as these living entities and try to, you know, get him back engaged in devotional service again. So that's so this is an amazing, you know, part of the Bhagavatam. You know, Narada Muni speaking with Srila Vyasadeva. And we're so fortunate to be have the opportunity to, you know, be able to tune in on this conversation and be, you know, privy to this. And even we're actually even more fortunate in this international side of Krishna consciousness, particularly here in New Dwarka, and well, and throughout North America, we have the opportunity to distribute it. That's a point I'd like to make. Okay? That, you know, this is, we're studying the first canto now. Okay? Now, of all the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's only one Srimad Bhagavatam that's available for mass distribution. I mean, full on mass distribution. And that happens to be this 1-1. This beautiful, as in the words of, I don't know whose words it is, this beautiful Bhagavatam. It is, look at it, it's beautiful. Actually, Archita, my dear god brother Archita, designed this cover. Well, Papa designed this cover, but he nicely put it in a, I don't know what you call this kind of cover, but it's, I love this book. This is a great book. Here it is, the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, part one. So I'm getting to that. This is, by the way, this is a Maha big book. When it first was done, it was just a big book. They only had the first seven chapters. It didn't have enough pages to qualify as a Maha big. So to accommodate the book distributors, the BBT got together. They had a meeting, and the trustees talked about it because they're very, you know, the standards. Prabhupada gave standards about for his books, and they decided, okay, yeah, that's okay. They added the eighth chapter, so it also has the prayers of Queen Kunti in it. Okay? So it's a Maha big book. The temple cost price, I believe, is like $2.75, which is not expensive. There's a lot of them in the warehouse, and this is and they're moving slow. So I'm making a plug here. You know, it's actually in our own interest. I mean, just think about it. You have an opportunity to give this conversation of Narada Muni with Srila Vyasadeva and so many awesome other, you know, amazing things to people. To be honest with you, I find that this book more easy to relate to and more, I like it better than even the Bhagavad Gita. I'm more attracted. If I had to choose, well, they're both awesome. I mean, you know, that's a tough thing to say, but this is, it's certainly on par. I mean, this is no stepchild. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam 1-1. When you give somebody a Srimad Bhagavatam 1-1, you are really giving them something that's you know, potentially can change their life. I mean, turn their life upside down and really get them, you know, get them going on the spiritual platform like anything. So think about that. This is, you know, they're available. They're just, you know, it's one amazing opportunity we have, not just to read the book. Actually, and you know what? When you try to distribute it, you'll get more realization when you're reading it. That's how Krishna consciousness works, right? When you try to distribute Krishna consciousness. So you try to distribute this book, you're going to feel Krishna from within your heart is going to inspire you to kind of aside from the fact that you're carrying it around all day, and, you know, just it's natural to just open it up and read a little bit here, read a bit there, you know, but you're going to get more of an inspiration, an impetus to read it, and you're going to get more realization. The more you try to distribute it to others, the more realization you're going to get yourself when you try to read it. So I guess I can just now. That's the introduction, and I guess I'll begin the class now. Actually, that was the introduction, but I got a little carried away there. But there was one point I'd like to make, though. Okay, so sorry from these points I already made. That so here, Vyasadeva here is thinking like, you know, as he said, I'm feeling incomplete, and in the purport, Prabhupada says, he says something interesting. I'll just make this one point and then end it because I don't want to go over time. He says, Srila Vyasadeva appeared to have lost the clue and therefore felt dissatisfaction. So, bringing it back home here, you know, like in those, I always try to do this. What's the lesson for us? What's the lesson for us in all this? Okay. Well, so Vyasadeva's lost the clue and therefore he's feeling dissatisfaction. So, I think the lesson for us is this, is we have to try to think about, you know, how does this relate to our situation? And I was thinking like that when I was preparing the class. And I was thinking, well, what does that mean, lost the clue? You know, what would be the equivalent of that for a devotee, losing the clue? And what I came up with was this. If you're forgetting that the point in everything we're doing is to please the spiritual master, you've lost the clue. You know, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text, I think it's text 40, Vyavasayatmika Buddha, he says the secret of success in devotional service is to please the spiritual master. See? So, you know, to the degree that we're remembering that, and that's our underlying motivation in everything that we're doing, to that degree, we're going to feel satisfied. To that degree, we haven't lost the clue, and to that degree, we're going to feel satisfied. But to the degree that we're forgetting that, you know, that the whole purpose is to, you know, in all these activities, everything I'm doing is to please the spiritual master. To that degree, we've lost the clue, and to that degree, we're going to feel dissatisfied, like Srila Vyasadeva was expressing. Okay? And I'll take it one step further. That a very important thing in pleasing the spiritual master is also to work cooperatively with the temple authorities. Temple authorities or, you know, GBC or whatever, authorities. You know, to work cooperative with authorities. Because they're actually representing him. You know, maybe not perfectly. We're doing the best we can, but, you know. So, if, you know. Okay, this is how I'll lead into this one. This morning I was reading, I was looking at that purport, the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita text 10, where that, Prabhupada gives Rupa Goswami's verse describing the stages of devotional service. Ado shraddha tato sadhu sangha tata anartya nivritti syat tato nishta tato ruchis, you know. And it's describing how it starts off with faith and then it goes to ado shraddha tato associating with devotees and then bhajana kriya and then engaging in devotional service. And then as a result of that, when you start properly engaging in devotional service and you take initiation, then anartha and avritti. And then after that, you become nishta. You become fixed in devotional service. And then after that, ruchi. You get a taste. Okay? So I was thinking that, you know what? Yeah, so somebody should be experiencing that. You know, you should be experiencing that if you're making progress in devotional service. But I was thinking to myself, you know what? I mean, I don't even know. Am I experiencing that? And I thought, well, if I'm going to be honest, I mean, yeah, I guess a bit, but maybe not that strong. And anyway, this is a little controversial, but I'm going to say it because I'm hoping it's a realization and not like a concoction. But considering, you know, the position of people in the Kali Yuga now, I think it's you know, that's there. That's a guideline. But I think it's even as an immediate sign, as an immediate indication of how we're doing in devotional service. It's even more important to know that your authorities are pleased with you than to be perceiving those symptoms manifesting in yourself. Do you follow that point? Was that clear? In other words, we're so fallen, you know, people in Kali Yuga, we're so fallen that you won't even you're not even necessarily going to experience that right away. We're that fallen. Mukunda Datta was mentioning this in a class he gave about a month or two ago, you know. In other words, unless you're really properly engaging in bhajan, you know, sadhu sangha and then bhajana kriya, you're not going to maybe even experience so in such a, you know, pronounced way, anartha nivritti, nishta, and, you know, but so, and you might, if you, you know, if you're doing things, you might, but you might not. But at least if, or it might be taking, it might take some time. So a more, as I said, a more immediate indication as to whether you're doing okay is if your authorities are pleased. If you're pleasing your authorities, then you can understand I'm doing okay, even if you're not. Even if you're not feeling like a lot of anartha nivritti, a lot of, you know, freedom from material desires and what to speak of, you know, nishta and ruchi. If your authorities are pleased with you, consider yourself doing okay. If your spiritual master, your temple president, if your spiritual master are telling you, you're doing good, don't worry, you're doing good, then you're doing good. And then those other things will follow in due course of time. But don't get discouraged if they're not there, like, right away, because, you know, we're so fallen, we might not experience them right away, or even after some period of time. Yeah. But at least this other thing, you can know right away. You can know it on a day-to-day basis. It's a very practical and very important, what's the word, you know, way of measuring how you're doing in devotional service, if your authorities are pleased with you. So I hope it's a realization, not a concoction. So I'll stop there and ask if anybody has any questions or comments. Yeah, Dr. Davis.
Cycle. And so we have every opportunity, we have every tool we need in order to come to the point where we can please our authorities. We have all the tools that we need. We have all the mercy that we need. We just got to grab onto the rope. You know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati talks about if you're in a well, someone throws you a rope. We have like 5 ropes hanging around us.
Right.
We can grab onto any one of them that we want.
So this is a comment, right?
This is a comment. All we got to do is just grab onto that rope. We have so many opportunities. And now that I'm realizing this, we also have Srila Vyasadeva, who's Vishnu Tattva in this.
Right. According to the Vaya Purana, this Vyasadeva is not an empowered jiva, but he's an expansion of Lord Vishnu. At the same time, I mean, like, you know, in this round of millenniums, Krishna's was here 5,000 years ago. Vyasadeva, that's an expansion of Vishnu. Et cetera. Lord Chaitanya, this is a special.
Yeah, we have so much opportunity, and if we don't utilize that opportunity, we're robbing ourselves of.
Yeah, we're really cheating ourselves. Yeah. You're right. I agree, 100%. Yeah.
Is there a Narada Muni in every universe?
I don't know. Anybody know the answer to that question? Is there a Narada Muni in every universe? Anybody remember anything they've heard along those lines? I don't know. We'll do some research and we'll get back to you. Yeah. Panabhata Babu.
Nice class, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just want to make a comment in terms of your last realization. I was just reading the 4th canto about the Prachetas, sons of Maharaj Prachinabharishad, who meditated in the water, underwater for 10,000 years. And at the end of that period, there's a nice picture in the Bhagavatam. It shows Lord Vishnu appearing on the back of Garuda in the water with all the demigods. And I thought it was very interesting that practically the first thing Krishna said when he talked, gave the Prachetas his blessings, he said, "I'm very pleased with your cooperative attitude." He said, "By your friendly relationship with others," he began his benedictions by saying that, and I thought that was very noteworthy, and that I think kind of further substantiates what you were saying. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. Garanga Prem, and then we'll finish.
Thank you very much for your nice class. You were saying that one day of Brahma is 8.64 billion years, right?
8.6 billion years.
Right? And half of that is the night of Lord Brahma.
Yep.
I'm just wondering what will happen to our earthly planet, the sun, the moon, and other stars during the night of Lord Brahma?
I think it's mentioned here. I got the impression from what I was reading this morning and here. It's been a while since I've kind of studied up on that. Let's see. Yeah. It says, and for the same period, Brahmaji rests at night in Yoga Nidra within the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the generator of Brahma. So it seems like during the night of Brahma, and I guess the universe rests in the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Thus, after the sleeping period of Brahma, when there is again creation by the will of the Lord through the agency of Brahma, all the great rishis appear from different parts of the transcendental body, and Narada also appears. So, based upon that, it sounds like everything goes into the body of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu for the night of Lord Brahma, and then when that period is over, things come out again. Does that sound correct? Something different happens at the end of Lord Brahma's life, but that sounds like to me what happens at the end of his day.
But I heard that there was one time when Lord Brahma wakes up and he found that the earthly planet is no longer on its orbit, but actually it is sink in the ocean. Right?
Garbhadak Ocean.
Yeah. It looks like this universe doesn't go to the body of Lord Vishnu.
I don't know. We'll have to study up on that. Unless somebody really knows clearly what the answer to that question is.
Well, I just want to mention there are different devastations, mm-hmm. different time periods. And one of the devastations, all the planets up to, I think, just under Lord Brahma's planet, are all dissolved. And then it mentions that the demigods are on those highest planets. They all get in their airplanes and they go up to Lord Brahma's planet because their planet is getting like wiped out.
Right.
And maybe that's after the day of Brahma, but like you say, there are different devastations.
I'll have to do some research. Thank you. Grantra Chuma Bhagatam Kijai. Srila Prabhupada Kijai.